Hello and welcome to Funny Business. A lot of funny and a lot of business on this one. I'm excited because we get straight into it. I feel like you were on this episode, Rob.
We had Jaden Basher from Investable, and I'll tell you right now, he's a smart dude, and I said it to him off after the chat finished. I feel like bringing the human element to this space is so important, and founders are doing it. They're the ones that are taking the risk on the sort of making shit happen in the first place. So love how we approach things. If you're interested in starting something and you want to know what it's all about and what people look for and how to get around the whole investment space and what VC is about, this episode's for you. So enjoy.
Hey, look at that, wrapped up perfectly.
Jaden, thank you so much for jumping on the Funny Business podcast. For those at home listening, tell us, who are you and what do you do?
Excellent. Thanks, Jen. So Jaden Basher from Investable. Investable is an early stage VC domiciled out of Australia, but we also have a presence in Singapore. And so when I say early stage, we're investing in pre-seed, seed, Series A companies. And we're a sector agnostic investor. So anything excluding life sciences and biotech, we invest in. And so we've been around for since 2014 as an investment syndicate, but then 2018 as a funds management business. We have over 140 odd portfolio companies now in the APAC region and then in North America, Europe, et cetera. Within Investable, I'm an investment principal, so leading a lot of the sourcings and screening of deals all the way through to investing in really quality founders and then supporting them through on their journey. So as you guys can appreciate, with a portfolio of 140 odd now, there's a lot of founder discussions that go on. I know this morning, chatting to four founders this morning, and it's just continuous, but it's really exciting to be on their journey with them and to support in any way we can.
Well, mate, we're pumped to have you on the show today, and I feel like for us, like, the startup space and that super early stage is, without trying to put people offside, it is the most exciting because there's so much room for opportunity, so much more room for growth, and the type of people that it attracts to the space. Like, my personal background doing some of the stuff in the corporate space, and it's a different kettle of fish of what's expected from people at the later stages of when things are up and going. What is it about startup space that attracted you in the first place?
Yeah, it's a good question. And so when I look back on it, I started my career in transaction tax and thought I wanted to be a lawyer and follow down my dad's path of being in tax, and then realized, no, that wasn't for me, the three volumes of tax ledge. So then jumped across into corp finance and then realized that I didn't want to live in Excel my whole life. And then had a really good opportunity working with a high net worth individual of setting up some benevolent funds for that individual and really started cutting my teeth on investing. And then I looked at the investing landscape, and obviously you have venture capital, you have private equity, et cetera. And what really attracted me to VC was my own experience at trying my hand at a startup. So it was called Verified Caller. And so it was a phone fraud prevention platform. And so it was all around two-way verification, i.e. you lads are calling up and saying, look, I'm from whatever bank, but Jaden, there's an issue with your account. We want to verify you before we start discussing this issue. And Australians are too trusting. They say, yep, here's my date of birth. You know, here's this, here's that. And they have all the information on them. And that's why phone fraud is the largest category of fraud in Australia. Because of that, we are too trusting. We just give up our details. And so this was all kind of pre-COVID. Obviously, now you look at that and you say, okay, well, this is something that, you know, all the banks are doing. And at that time, they weren't. So, you know, got in front of the likes of the big banks and other names and thought I had something there, but then came to the stark realization that it was really a feature, not a product. And spend about a year and a half of my time working through, as a founder does, all the trials and tribulations of that founder journey, everything for, you know, thinking that you've got a customer on the hook and then realizing that there's another layer of approvals that they need to go through. You get through that layer of approvals and think, oh, yep, I finally got them. I can crack open a beer and celebrate. And then there's the next layer of approvals, all the way up to kind of board level and then it falling over with certain customers. But that journey really painted a really good picture for me and really gave me that experience of what a founder goes through. And so now that's like super relatable when I'm dealing with founders. And so that experience drew me to venture capital. And then when you look at VC, people think it's one beast. It's not. It's you know, segmented within that. So you kind of have the early stage funds, which are focused on kind of pre-seed and seed, sometimes Series A, and then you have your later stage funds from Series A all the way down the series funding and then through to kind of pre-IPO funds too. Why I was attracted to the early stage fund and particularly Investable was variety. So I found in my previous career there wasn't a lot of variety, and I'm someone that, you know, can get bored if I'm sitting on the same transaction for 6 months. I think most people are like that too. And so, you know, at Investable we're seeing over 400 founders a month. And so as you guys can appreciate, like super high volume, high velocity, really exciting. Every day you're learning something new because you're speaking to someone that's, you know, devoted their blood, sweat and tears to a certain concept. And so that was really what drew me to VC and why I'm here today.
I feel like here on getting bored, I feel like doing stuff with Locke. He's bored me to death, yeah. Mate. He's,
I was going to say the exact same thing about you.
Hey, we got it too slow, mate, didn't
you? Yeah, I did. You're on fire today. I'll give you that.
No, but what about, like you mentioned before, like being in the world of tax growing up, your old man was a lawyer, is that right?
So he has his own tax practice, but not a lawyer, yeah.
So growing up, you thought like, fuck, I'm going to get into the sexy stuff, go straight into tax.
It's funny, right? Because my brother and I, he's 11 months older, so people think we're twins. Both of us ended up in tax, wanting to do what the old man does. And then both of us realized within, you know, 2-3 years, it wasn't tax that we wanted to do. And then we both went different ways. But you are right. I think when you're younger, it's a lot different, I think, in Australia compared to some other markets. I know, like in the US, your first year of university, it's kind of you just do all these like varied subjects. You don't have to kind of specialize on a certain degree, where here in Australia you finish school, you don't really have an idea of what you want to do for a lot of people. And so, you know, I got the marks at school and said, okay, I'm going to do commerce law, went down that path. And then it was just something that was familiar to me. You know, I find my dad to be like highly inspirational to myself, from where he's come from to where he is today. And so I think for my brother and I, it was just familiar. You know, he supported us and mum too. And so, yeah, we jumped at that. But yeah, 3 volumes of tax ledge is disgusting. You know, I wish I could show you guys, but it's about a foot long of pages. And yeah, absolutely horrendous.
Yeah, I don't think it sounds too dense. Too dense.
Oh, yeah. I like picture books and podcasts and movies.
Hey, but let's chat like maybe like the first time that you started getting interested in the world of startups. You know, like what was the, do you have like the first one that got you into it in the first place?
Yeah. And so when I was still at EY in their kind of corp finance team, and then I set up a benevolent fund for a high net worth here in Australia. He was seeing, you know, a dozen or so deals a month, and he would, you know, run them past myself, and they were, you know, really interesting deals. He's an incredible individual, and has been extremely successful, you know, in his own right, and is a real fundamentals investor. And so the way he analyzes companies was you know, really insightful for me, and great to learn from someone such as him. So you know, I owe a lot of my knowledge today to working with him. But then I realized too that, you know, there's a vast difference between investing in an early stage business and then investing in a kind of a business with product market fit, or a business that, you know, has a run rate there. And so when you're looking at early stage businesses, it's exactly like what we're doing today. I think first and foremost, it's just sitting down with the individual or individuals and just understanding their motivations, understanding, you know, their vision for the business, et cetera. And so a lot of what we do over indexes on the founders themselves. And it's funny because when I said I was going to go into VC and particularly early stage VC, some of my friends at, you know, private equity funds, et cetera, they said, oh, so, you know, you're going to be a bit of a cowboy and just go there, have a meeting and then write a check. And that's about the extent of your DD. But it's not. There is a lot more work that goes into it that, you know, the founders that we invest in would appreciate. But first and foremost, it's around the founder. And so, you know, we have dozens of conversations a week with different founders where we just sit down, take an hour of their time, get them to explain to us their motivations. And I think, you know, that's fundamentally important to kind of tick off as kind of the biggest box before investment is around that. So, and then looking at specific examples of startups, it's funny because it was varied with different stages. And then I invested in some really early deals initially, and I was looking too much on the fundamental side and not enough on, you know, the founder solution fit angle. And so over time, I've seen certain investments, personal investments of mine, I look back on and said, oh, you know, with hindsight, I probably should have been more aware of focusing more on the founder themselves as opposed to, you know, the market or the business model.
I was just going to say, like, what do you look for in founders when you're meeting them? What is it that's triggering something in your brain where you're going, yeah, we need to go down this path with these people?
Yeah, it's a good question. And so what we find, and being an early stage VC, you see a varied mix of different founders and different concepts. And so you get this super early kind of ideation stage deals where someone's just woken up one day and said, look, I want to quit my day job. I want to move in and you know, start a startup and all the rest. And you do get, you know, a fair chunk of those. And so I think what I like to tick off first is that founder solution fit. Like, what motivates you to quit your day job and to start, you know, this business? And I think that's really important to understand, is those motivations behind why they're doing it, and that it wasn't just one day they woke up and said, hey, I want to change, you know, heard that startups are cool, I'm going to try my hand at a startup. So yeah, founder solution fit is really important to me. Also, you know, I want to ensure that we have a good like relationship and a good rapport between the founder and myself, and you get along with them. So, you know, and that's from the founder's perspective too. When we're investing early, we're going to be with them for the next, you know, 5 to 10 years on their journey. So I want to ensure that, you know, I'm a suitable partner for them. And then vice versa, that we get along really well. And so I think being genuine is fundamentally important. And I think some founders put on a bit of a facade, rightly or wrongly, and I get it. It's kind of intimidating, you know, having those conversations with investors. But I think some of the best conversations I've had is where the founders are totally transparent, and you ask them questions, and they say, "Look, actually, you know, I haven't thought about that, but that's a great idea." Or they tell you something which they know is not the response that I want to be hearing, but they're totally upfront and transparent about it. And so if I'm summarizing that, I think founder solution fit, you know, being genuine, being honest are all fundamentally important. But then also there's the bigger picture around, you know, what is the vision for the business? And so with venture capital investors, you know, people talk around it needs to be a $1 billion business. You know, if you look at the Australian market, there's not a lot of examples of $1 billion businesses, right? And so I think most people can agree that not all startups are going to become a $1 billion business. In fact, most won't. But that's not saying that they're not going to be successful. There's a, you know, a vast category of startups that are highly, highly successful, but don't hit that $1 billion mark and aren't classified as a unicorn. And so personally, I don't use the metric of, you know, it needs to be a unicorn for me to invest. I think that there's a hugely, you know, underserved market there that will never hit that $1 billion valuation, but still can be very, very successful companies.
I appreciate you saying that. I feel like some of the conversation we've been having lately is feeling like there's a bunch of founders out there that are either disheartened or disillusioned on how they potentially should pitch what it is they're doing, knowing that, hey, I don't know if this scope could be a unicorn. I don't know if this is going to be a $1 billion company, but if it got to here, I'd be happy. If it got to this point, I'd be happy. And like, I don't know, like for us coming in, we feel like a bit of like we've landed in this space, like we're explaining to you off air and understanding sort of how it works. Would love to get into a little bit more from the early stage perspective. Let's say it's like pre-seed or pre-revenue sort of companies. What is it that you look for that allows companies to rise to the top? You know what I mean? Like from a, what do you look for from a evidence-based or traction sort of stuff? Or what does good look like at that early stage? Because I understand definitely from a, if you're lucky enough, you've got a track record, you've done things before, it might be a lot easier to get investment from an idea on a piece of paper. But say you're new to doing startups, you've got a really great concept, you're trying to make some shit happen. What do you think is a good way to approach it if you are that at that early stage?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And just picking up on something that you said before around the unicorn example, there is some method to the madness of VCs when they say that we only invest in unicorns. And so if you look at the power laws, effectively, you know, the top decile or quartile of your portfolio will be the ones that generate the majority of your return. And so that's why a lot of VCs have the lens that it needs to be a unicorn business or it needs to be absolutely massive, is because they know that out of a portfolio of 30, it is probably five or four of those that are going to provide you the outside returns. So there is some logic behind that. But in saying that, you know, if it's high risk, high reward, right? Like if you're always aiming for companies that can be $1 billion businesses, as I said before, you're missing out on those businesses that can be highly successful, but you know may not reach that mark. And then to your question around what we look for, it does take an early stage mindset to be able to get comfortable with investing at an early stage, because you can always talk yourself out of an investment in an early stage company because, you know, they don't have a runway, they may not have customers, et cetera. So a lot of our processes are around validating certain propositions that the founders are putting to us. So you may not necessarily have a customer, but we may be able to go and through our networks, be able to go and speak to a potential customer and put that proposition to them and gather some insights on that. So, you know, myself and my colleagues, we don't purport to be experts in all these sectors. Far from it, and particularly being an agnostic investor, I think it would be remiss of us to think we are experts. And so a lot of the conversations I have with founders, they're teaching me. And so I'm learning a lot from what they're saying. But then I take that away and then I benchmark that against you know, basic principles around fundamentals of how a business should perform. So for argument's sake, if I can give you an example, is around, you know, what the business model may look like. So I think there's a lot of really great concepts out there, but when a great concept, you know, will really appeal to a lot of people, but then how do you monetize that concept? What's the path towards commercialization? What does that look like? And pricing models, they change over time, and whatever business model, you know, or pricing model they tell me then, I can guarantee you it'll be different in 6 months' time, and it'll be different again in a year's time. But it's important just to understand how the founder or founders are thinking around these concepts, knowing that they're not set in stone, but it's more the rationalization of what that will look like over time. Then there's other considerations around, you know, sector, industry, and the market sizing and the opportunity itself. And so that kind of feeds into a bit of what I was saying before around, you know, $1 billion businesses, et cetera. And so benchmarking the sector itself that which they operate, looking at any, adjacent companies or competitors that may have operated in that space or companies that they can leverage off the journey of them. And so I think another consideration which I think is on false pretenses is if there's a competitor in a space, well, then you shouldn't enter that market. And I disagree with that. I think there's a number of examples out there where companies, there's been an incumbent who's been displaced by a new entrant who's a fast follower or has just come to market with a better proposition. And so, you know, when I'm looking at a market, I don't say, oh, okay, yeah, it's highly competitive, so we're not going to enter. I look at those other competitors and break it down. What are they doing well? What are they not doing well? And then what is this company proposing to do well? And where are some potential gaps? So they're just a couple of examples around, you know, industry, competition, like business model. We obviously spoke around the founder too, but then there's a number of other aspects such as go-to-market and the path to commercialization, because at such an early stage, a lot of founders don't have a clearly defined path to commercialization. And so if I could if I could share with founders one point, I think that is key, is anyone investing in your business wants to see the path to revenue. And so don't lose sight that number one metric, you know, there's all these different metrics out there, you know, CAC to LTV, et cetera. The one thing that truly matters is revenue. And so if you can keep that front of mind and always working towards, okay, how am I going to get that first dollar into the business? You get that first dollar in, how am I going to get that first $100,000 into the business and then $1 million, et cetera. So yeah, I think that needs to be a common goal, which everyone's all working towards within a startup.
What about the topic of valuations? You know, people at that super early stage that might be pre-reb or they're having to play around with some different business models or how they think they might tackle getting some revenue in. What are your thoughts on how people should price it up?
Yeah. And so a lot of people go to market and they will front run with a valuation. So I'll come to market and say, look, I think my business is valued at $5 million or $10 million. I caution our founders against that. I think ultimately the market decides what valuation is. And I've had some tough conversations with founders where I say, I think your business is worth this. And it's half of what they've come to me and saying, but I always caveat whatever valuation I propose to a founder. And I say, but who am I to decide? I'm not the market. I say, go out there, speak to 10 different investors, and then you'll understand what the market price is for your startup and what the valuation is. So I think it's important not to take one person's word on it. I think the second point there is, you don't necessarily have to lead with a valuation. You can have those conversations and then come together with an informed valuation. Now, at an early stage, that's going to be your most expensive capital that you bring into the business from a dilutionary point of view. And so I think you need to be really careful around who you bring on board in that first funding round. And so we're talking around, you know, there's pre-seed investors such as Investable in the market, but maybe there's that angel round that comes before. And so I think a number of startups often jump the gun and say, okay, I'm going to go straight out and my first round is going to be an institutional round with a VC fund. That's not always to their benefit, because VC funds will typically be a lot sharper on valuation. And I think at that early stage of the business, if you can bring someone in, an angel in who has sector expertise or can bring something to the business, not just capital, I think that that's really like fundamentally important to the business's evolution, because there's a lot of unknowns at that stage. And so bringing in not just capital, but also that expertise in an angel investor who won't necessarily price the round according to what, you know, VC funds are seeing 400 deals a month, but will price around based on the fact that they're getting involved. Maybe they're getting a bit of sweat equity, so it'll be less dilutive. Then once you get to the pre-seed round, you know, you have a bit more runs on the board. And so an institutional investor will then, you know, be able to take on from where that angel has got you to.
I think too, the community aspect, you know, in the early stages, once you're getting people excited about what you're doing, it brings the whole, what did we say, that it takes a village to raise a kid or whatever. It's like the people around it that makes it successful as well. You know, like you need that swell, you need those people, you know, your cheerleaders telling people about what you're doing and how you're building it. So I think like that storytelling and community aspect in the early stages is like key.
Yeah, it certainly is. And the founder journey It's a difficult one, and there's no hiding from that. And I just feel very fortunate that I was on that journey for a year and a half, which in comparison to a lot of our other founders is a very minute time period relative to the journeys that they've been on. And so you do need support. Definitely don't go in it alone, because it is difficult. You know, one person can't be doing all these different things. It's just, it is impossible. And so to your point, leverage your community, leverage other founders. And so we, last Thursday, we had an investable event where we had founders in the room, we had investors in the room, and then we had the investable team there too. And it was amazing just seeing different founders, you know, chatting to themselves around their different propositions, saying, oh, I know this person in this space, let me introduce you. And that's what we do too as investors. A lot of the support we give is not necessarily direct support, but also just introducing them to other people who can support them. And so to your point around community, it definitely is essential. And I think we do have a vibrant startup community here in Australia, but it's very much you get what you put in. And so I think, you know, if you're more engaged in that community, you will see those benefits, but you need to put yourself out there. And I know it's uncomfortable for a lot of people. Before I started in VC, I didn't like, you know, doing things like this, jumping on podcasts or going and speaking at events. It is part of the ecosystem that you kind of put yourself out there. And people are very forgiving, you know, if of different, you know, things that you do and say. And so I think it's a really warm environment. And so, you know, you might go and pitch 1 week and you're pitching some proposition, and then they see you 6 months later and you're pitching something totally different, or you've changed your business model or whatever it may be. People don't look back and say, oh, guys, like, you know, you would tell me this 6 months ago, now you're telling me that. I think everyone understands that everyone's iterating and kind of wanting to move towards that North Star and moving forward together.
Yeah, it's not a bad thing to have a crack and try, you know, because everyone respects it. I think everyone's been there at some point in their life where they've given something a crack and it hasn't worked out or whatever. So that level of just like, there's no need to bring people down like that, you know, like, It is hard. Like, I look around and it's like, people create shit. I'm blown away at everything around us. It's like, well, people made it. It's like, this is nuts.
Sometimes it's hard to impress you, though. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
He goes past you. Look at the
clouds. Simple life, simple man.
Look at the clouds today. The clouds are looking pretty good.
I'm grateful.
Symbols going up in his head. I'd love to chat about like the state of, you mentioned before, like the you get out what you put in for the Aussie startup scene. We'd love to get your thoughts on sort of like maybe the changes over the last few years and where you think it's at and where do you think it's going to go for 2024?
So recently it's been difficult from a fundraising perspective with where capital markets are at. So if you go back to 2020, 2021, interest rates were low, the market risk premium was low. So there was a lot of money flowing into alternatives, flowing into venture capital, flowing into private equity. That's obviously dried up. And I know a lot of people are doing it tough with their mortgages and other things with where interest rates are, but that does flow into VC. And so we need to consider VC in the like broader macro environment. And so there is certain factors that play into, you know, where funding's available and when it's not. And so because we've seen funding pools dry up, it means that certain funds, like there's been less fundraisers for funds raising capital. But I think we're fortunate here in the Australian ecosystem because we had a number of funds that raised capital during that time where the market was pretty hot. And so I know Investable, we raised a fund at that time or two funds. I know, you know, the big three players here in Australia, they raised very large funds during that time period too. And then a number of other funds, kind of mid-tier funds, did too. And so if I look at where the Australian VC ecosystem is at, I think that there is a lot of money sitting there within funds, which is like accessible for startups, which I think is great. I think the startup ecosystem, there's support there from government. I think the government could be doing more. I look at some initiatives in other markets, and I think that, you know, maybe the government government could be providing more, you know, rebates or grants or whatever that may be. But I think that there is a really interesting time period now. We've had tight employment, and if that does start to unwind, and we've seen some tech layoffs and things like that, you have highly motivated, intelligent individuals who are leaving these tech businesses. We have pools of money sitting there ready to be deployed in great founders. And I think so that's a really good cocktail for some great Australian success stories coming out of this market. So I think that's really positive. Something that I've really trying to be champion at the moment too is around syndicating checks between different VCs. And so, as I mentioned before, there is the top three VCs, which are, you know, are very active, but there's also VCs like Investable, and there's a myriad of other ones too. And we have a really great relationship with those VCs, and all of us, you know, try and get together and help each other out. And we have a great relationship with the large VCs too. But I think as a smaller VC, you know, wanting to invest in companies here in Australia where there is, you know, it can be dominated by those larger players, I think it's important that, you know, you do have these relationships with other VCs. So you can go to a founder and say, hey, we're going to bring to you a proposition where we have a diversified capital pool and we have diversified networks. We have a diversified heads around a table where you're getting numerous thoughts and numerous opinions and things like that. And I think that's a really valuable proposition, which I think will bring true or more true to founders where they like that diversity of thought, capital, et cetera.
Such a big fan of that, man. It feels like it's like the collaborative over competitive model of at that super early stage of the more people you get around a founder, the more support you can provide them, the more environment, the more things that you allow them to just do their thing and be, and off they go and make shit happen. It's like, how can, I don't know, I feel like
it
de-risks everyone in a nice way. You know what I mean? Like, I think a lot of the stuff that from the founders and that we talk of, it's like they are taking such a big risk. So especially if they're ones that are bootstrapping or they've put their life on hold or they've got mortgages, they've got kids, or they've given up safer jobs with better wages to come in and make stuff happen. It's like, I feel like at that early stage where I was sort of alluding to earlier before, it's like in Australia and what we've seen is that there is not a missing link, but that support element for people that early stages of wrapping arms around people and saying, let's have it. Like, again, 100% at the start, like has to be worth your time, has to be a decent business. Let's just say they've ticked those boxes. Like, how do we just make more shit happen here in Australia? You know, like, there's so many smart people doing cool stuff, and people should be encouraged to be in this space, not discouraged the fact that they're not going to be able to live a proper life a little bit. Does that ring true for you?
Yeah, it does. And look, it when I was working at EY and I started a verified caller, I didn't have the courage to say, I'm going to quit and I'm going to go off and work on this. And so I was doing that, you know, part-time, like very late nights and kind of on the weekend when I wasn't doing my day job. And so for all these people that have the courage to go in there and give it a crack, I definitely take my hat off to them. And I think it is a huge, huge step where, as you said, you know, some people are quitting their jobs and trying and, you know, rolling the dice with a startup. And there's a lot of unknowns with that. And so I think it is important that everyone comes together and supports those individuals. And whilst we invest in probably 1 in 150 founders that we see, we still try and provide some guidance to those that we don't invest in. And so that will be in the form of, you know, providing them something meaningful that they can take away from that discussion. And always we never close the door. So I might have a discussion with a founder and it's not for us for whatever reasons, if it's our mandate or if it's, you know, something to do with the business that doesn't necessarily align, but the door is always open. And I think that's where, you know, the Australian startup ecosystem could do better is just ensuring that there isn't that stigma between VCs and startups. And so I know that I've founders calling me all the time, not just from within our portfolio, but outside of our portfolio. And they just have a question, say, hey, look, I'm doing this funding round. I'm thinking of framing it up this way. You know, what do you think? Or do you mind if I flick you my pitch deck? And can you just spend, you know, 5-10 minutes, just look through it? And so I think having that cohesion between the, you know, investors and the VCs and the startup ecosystem, I think that's really important and something that, you know, we should definitely work harder on to ensure that everyone flourishes. Because if startups are flourishing, it means that, you know, VCs are flourishing. And so fundamentally, you need to ensure that the startups are doing well.
Mate, it's probably a good segue. A question we ask all our guests is a bit of a mental health one. What do you turn to when you're looking to get some energy back in your life?
Energy. So I have a set time in my diary. It's 6 till 7 p.m. Every evening where I go to the gym. And so gone are the days where I could go to the gym and have my own set there that I would do a workout to. Now I go to a CrossFit gym where they have blasting music. They have the set written up on the board. And so you don't have to think. You just go there, you know, get a good sweat on, just, you know, listen to some music. And so for me, that's really important is taking that time out of the day where I don't have to think, you know, the music's too loud and you're working too hard to think about work. You're just thinking about surviving and trying to get through the hour and not passing out. So that's something that's really important for me. And then I think separate to that is around taking time out of the day and taking a step back. And so I think for the line of work in VC is, you know, there's a lot of different stakeholders that you're looking to support. And so you have your investors, but then obviously you have your founders and sometimes there may be conflicting, you know, priorities between the two. And so I think it's important to kind of humanize what we do. Ultimately, we're dealing with people, whether it's on, you know, the founder side of who have, you know, put everything into a startup or if it's on the investor side who maybe, you know, have put their life savings in towards, you know, your fund. So I like to try and humanize what I do and just to remind myself that we are all humans. We do make mistakes. And I think I set out time in a day to kind of go outside, whether it's, you know, when we're down at Circle K going for a walk around the harbour, or if I'm at home, I'll go sit outside for, you know, 5-10 minutes and just reflect back on those conversations that I've had during the day and just think around where I can improve on that dialogue, just to ensure that, you know, all parties that I'm engaging with, we're getting the most out of.
What about next year, mate? What are you looking forward to?
Next year, I think, is going to be a really good year when it comes to funding. And so when I was talking about before around, there was some tech layoffs and we're starting to see a number of those individuals coming out of those tech businesses and forming their own startups, which I think is super exciting. Interest rates will come off at some point next year. So I think the macro environment will improve for private markets, which I think is great for startups. And I think this year it has been a difficult environment and talking around conflicting priorities and around, you know, the juxtaposition of kind of two competing aspects is if you look at 2023, our existing portfolio, you know, there were some founders that are doing it really tough to fundraise given the macro environment. And so you're having conversations with those individuals around them not being able to get money into their business. And then on the flip side, it's been a better environment for investors where there's more time to do DD. So as opposed to 2020 and 2021, where the market was hot, you had a couple of, you know, you had a month to do a DD process. Now you're having 2-3 months to really assess the business. And so 2023 has been tough for a lot of founders. I think there's really strong indications that 2024 will start to see the market improve. I know it's been quite topical around valuations for tech businesses, and you only have to look to you know, equity markets, to excluding kind of the FANG stocks or certain stocks within that. The tech valuations have really taken a hit, and so I think we've seen that moderate now. I think they will start to improve. So yeah, all in all, I'm really excited for 2024. I think it's going to be a really strong year, and I think, as I said, there's great indications already that that some of that there's going to be some really promising startups backed by some of these individuals who have left these tech companies that want to do something new.
Well, mate, thank you so much for jumping on and chatting with us today and letting us pick your brain. If people want to connect with you or find out what you do, how do they sure, not hard, mate, not hard. How do they find you?
Yeah, so they can reach out to Investable. We're down at Circular K, so I actually like grabbing a coffee whenever it may be. So they can reach out to me directly via email. So my email is Jayden, Jayden, at investable.com. So feel free to reach out to me. We'll grab a walking coffee around where the Opera House is, which is always nice. Bring your sunnies. It can get pretty glary there. Feel free to reach out if you're a startup or if you're someone that's looking to move into the startup space, or alternatively, if you're someone that's looking to move into VC, always open for a conversation.
Well, mate, thank you so much. And pumped to get this out there in the world.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Thanks a lot for your time, gents.
Hey. Jayden Basher. I wouldn't mind that last name. It's tough as, isn't it?
Basher Bradford.
Imagine that. I'm on the CrossFit machine. My last name's Basher. I'm sweating it up a treat. No one's coming near me.
No. You've tried to claim Bruiser Bradford for a while. I've heard you say that a couple of times.
Bruiser Bradford, Hollywood Hicks. Huh?
That's our tag team name.
Yeah, maybe Jayden Basher. He could be the manager. He's good on the mic. He could come down and just pump us up, get us heat, whatever. I feel like it'd be
good. Do you reckon he watches wrestling?
Well, maybe. I reckon he's about our age, so I reckon when it was hot, when it was the bee's knees, I feel like he would have been there.
Which is really weird, actually, for those who are listening. You're actually holding a wrestling figurine as we speak. I'm not actually joking at all. You're holding a figurine of who is it?
The Rock.
That's weird. Yeah, no, what are you doing, 40-year-old virgin? if you're new to the pod, send this episode to a friend. Goes a long way to help us out. Hope you enjoyed the episode. Plenty more to come. See you next time.
Hey, funny business listeners, Caleb from SquareX here. I just wanted to jump on and let you guys know at the end of this ep, SquareX is currently open for investment. So if you're interested in learning more about what we do at SquareX and want to get involved in the digital future of the agricultural supply chains, you can reach out to me directly on LinkedIn or to the Dream Big Social Club team to learn more.